Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast. I'm Jesse Tyler. I'll be your host. The goal of this series is to have owner to owner discussions about a wide range of ownership experience and culture topics to bring more insight into the individual ownership experience. My own interest within the space is talking to many of the essential workers, frontline workers, rank and file, partly because that's who I spend the most time with. I've been on site at work every day through the pandemic supporting our essential workers. I find myself with other ESOPs just fascinated by the truck drivers, the assemblers, the machine operators, the bakers, hearing the voices that aren't usually heard. And there's a deeper interest in the rank and file and the frontline folks is that in the rest of the economy outside of ownership, they're usually left out of wealth building, security, and potentially job quality. And so the idea that we have owners that are participating and we're hearing from those from the owner-to-owner perspective, I just find it endlessly fascinating. So I wanted to share a little bit about what the podcast is about. I'm excited to welcome my two guests today. Rodney North is the host of the Why Worker Co-ops podcast, and Brett Kiesling, who runs the EO Podcast Network and has two of his own podcasts. Brett and I met at one of the ESOP Association conferences, hit it off. He was looking for folks to have different conversations and from the ownership perspective. And I put my hand out and it's been a lot of fun to a friend. And then it was Rodney North. I really didn't know anything about co-ops. I had no idea. I've frequented them as a customer and I just never really appreciated the expansive world of worker co-ops. So I'm excited to have for the guests today, Rodney North and Brett Kiesling. Rodney, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Brett, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And I'm actually going to sit back and let you guys do your thing. But first of all, let me just say congratulations to both of you. I've been working with you and we'll talk about it more at the end, but I'm so excited for your podcast. I'm so excited to be a guest on your podcast. And I can't wait for all of employee ownership to see with both of your podcasts what I've already seen behind the scenes. You guys are going to knock it out of the park. So with that, you guys have a good talk and circle back with me later.
All right. Thanks, Brett. So Rodney, as we've been getting to work together, I've been fascinated by the depth of your experience and knowledge in worker co-ops. And I realized as much as I'm enthusiastic about ownership, I had sort of a narrow scope of just thinking of that as the ESOP world. So could you share a little bit about your background and your experience, and then also some insights into the Why Worker Co-ops podcast that you've been working on?
Sure. So I've been in the worker co-op community for 25 years now, 20 of those with Equal Exchange, one of the nation's better known worker co-ops because they have a very public brand with their organic and fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, bananas, what have you. Like a lot of folks, when I arrived there, I didn't know a worker cooperative from anything else. It was just a totally foreign idea. There were maybe 100, 150 in the country at the time. This is in 1996. And so I had to learn about it from the inside. And it took a while even then to really get fired up about it. But that happened, you know, fast forward to today where I'm literally jumping out of my seat to get behind a microphone and talk to people about worker co-ops. And they're coming along, but they can do so much more. And it's because of folks like you, Jesse, that I want to spread the message, spread the word, so to speak. Folks like yourself who have a little exposure, certainly through employee ownership, because that's a big circle and worker cooperatives are a smaller circle within that. Yeah, I want to reach people like you who are open-minded and curious about this, what I think is an underutilized tool in society's economic toolbox.
That's great. So I would like to know more of what, if someone's going to listen into the Why Worker Co-ops, what are some of the things they should be expecting? What are some of those things you want them to be looking for when they come to you for your expertise and guests?
Sure. So as the name implies, you know, we are unapologetically making the case for worker cooperatives, whether they are startups or existing businesses that could grow or potential conversions. And every episode, we're going to look at either what I call one why, you know, one way that a worker cooperative makes a difference for their employees, aka worker owners, for the businesses themselves, for their communities, or for the nation at large. Or we'll look at one way people can help support worker cooperatives through their patronage, you know, choosing to get your coffee from a worker co-op as opposed to from a large corporation, or how we can change the legal environment to be more supportive of worker co-ops, what we can do with financing and investing and other means to help more co-ops start, or existing ones to grow, or for existing businesses to convert, maybe instead of shutting their doors, how we can help existing businesses convert to the worker co-op model.
Well, I appreciate that. And so I'm curious to hear like another layer deeper. When I come at worker co-op topic with now growing curiosity, again, with an ESOP background, and in the ESOP world, I've heard a lot of people say something to the effect of, we own the company, we contribute to the company, but the leadership team runs the company, something along those lines. Can you share some insight? You had made a comment as we're getting to know each other about one vote, one voice. Can you share some insight on that? I just find it absolutely fascinating.
Sure. And as I understand it, within ESOPs, some employees may have a few shares and others have many or many, many shares. So the ownership stake is not flat. In worker cooperatives, it is flat. We talk about one worker, one share of stock, one vote. So, you know, the new woman on the packaging line in the warehouse has one share of stock, has one vote on matters that are brought before the owners. The founder, maybe he or she has been there 30 years, may make more money. They also have one share of stock, one vote in company matters. So it more closely resembles the civic, the democratic experience that we have. You know, you could have become a citizen last year, you have one vote, and somebody could have been here and their family may have been here for a long time. They also only have one vote. So we're trying to bring that into the workplace. And so in that way, it's going to be different. But also, as within ESOPs, there's a lot of diversity within the co-op worker co-op sector. Some have a more traditional hierarchical management structure, like where I was by the time I left, I think we had 150 employees. Department directors, managers, our assistant managers, rank and file employees. Others have flatter hierarchies. Some have the same pay for everybody. Others have some range of pay. Like I think by the time I left Equal Exchange, it was 1 to 4. The highest paid person would make no more than 4 times as much as the least paid person, which is drastically different than what we see in the conventional workplace, where the gap can be in the hundreds. You know, the highest paid person making 300 times more than the least paid or even the average paid person. So that is a characteristic of worker co-ops too, is basically the wealth is spread more evenly through the business. There's the one share, one vote. So if somebody's running for the board of directors, the new worker owner has a vote and the founder has a vote. Either person can nominate somebody for the board. Either person can run for the board. And it could even be like where we were, the top management would not run for the board. It wasn't technically a rule, it was a practice, because we thought the top management should answer to the board, not be on it. While from the conventional business perspective, this all seems wildly radical. If you start from like your high school civics, it looks, well, of course, you know, we rightfully are very excited about democracy. One reason it was said we went into Afghanistan was try to promote a democratic culture there where there had not been one. You know, we fight wars over this principle. The least we could do is to try to bring some of it to the workplace.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like at an ESOP, there'll be a percentage traditionally, and generally the plans can be different, but generally there'll be a percentage of your total compensation, your salary or total hourly, and that percentage after you are become part a participant, you receive that going forward as long as the company is healthy and that can be sustained. And it goes year to make sure that can be done. And successfully, ESOPs have a similar cadence to that. So it's for wealth building, it's a much longer term game. you know, so first couple of years, people aren't so sure, but then after 5, 7, 10 years, then it can be a significant change. So I'm hearing that difference with the worker co-ops, and I'm just smiling, thinking of the idea that we would all have a vote, a single vote for certain things. Help me understand my impression. And I'm not sure where I picked up the phrase. I heard somebody say that like an employee-owned company or an ESOP is sort of community good, social good, but a co-op is community good, social action. Can you give me a little more insight in sort of the social action spirit of the co-op world?
Oh, I had not heard that phrase before, so I'd like to find out where you did hear it, and because there's probably an interesting story there. It could be that, well, I've referred to some things that were action-oriented. Maybe nominating yourself to serve on the board. Nominating anybody. It could be your coworker. That's a more active role. Certainly serving on your board of directors is a more active role. Something we didn't get into are all the other ways in a cooperative you might participate. I served on many committees as chair of some committees, as chair of a task force once. We were trying to codify what were the rights and responsibilities of our worker owners. And that got tasked to a small group of us who were worker owners to draw this up, kind of like a Bill of Rights. Doing that kind of work is very active. It's not the same as just what you might see in your checkbook or in your bank account. And also having this opportunity to have a voice in the governing of your own business. One of the very first things I witnessed at Equal Exchange was the worker owners engaging in a weekend retreat to draft, I think, the first mission statement for the business. What are we here to do? That's a very active role. You do that kind of stuff, you begin to see your role within the workplace differently. And I think this is glorious. You punch out, you go home, you see your role in your local community differently. Because for 8 hours or 9, 10 hours a day, you weren't a cog in the machine. You weren't just punching a clock and taking orders. You had a voice, and you may not always get your way, but you're participating in a different way. You do that, it builds a muscle. It begins to change what you expect. So when you go home back into your community, you're probably going to be more active.
Yeah, that's great. There's a concerning risk for us as a country is that there is not enough civic engagement with folks. I think I read it was under 30 or 35 and under. There's a lot of voices, but there's not actually volunteering on local boards, school boards, select boards, community boards, and things like that. So it's been really interesting to learn about the heightened level of engagement that the worker co-op community has, like your muscles and bones. It's been really interesting. So I want to see if we can sort of cross our different focus and passion areas from ESOPs to worker co-ops. So one of the questions that I ask every guest on Owner to Owner is, what does ownership mean to you? So you're having been very prominent at Equal Exchange and been very involved in helping actually grow the other co-ops in the community. Can you share from your perspective of the intentionally very open question, what does ownership mean to you?
The first thing for me is around control. To have some, and again, because it's a group exercise, no one person is always going to get their way. And in fact, you might be on a losing side of every vote. You have a chance, you and your peers all have an equal chance to have some say in your workplace, which to me is an extension of self-determination, which is an extension or a manifestation of liberty. And that's something also in the United States we rightfully cherish, is our liberty. And so for me, it's hard to fathom anymore after having had this opportunity. It's hard to fathom going to a workplace where I didn't have a say. And that feels like a violation of liberty. So ownership to me means some of those things, like having an opportunity to have a voice, an opportunity to participate, and through all of that, have some sliver of control. We, as the worker owners of a given business, have some semblance of control over what happens in that business. So that's one part of ownership. Another is a claim on the success of the business. We put in the time, both on the clock and off the clock, for things like committees and serving on boards, whatnot. As a part of that, we have a claim on the financial success. And as owners, we bear our responsibility when we have a loss. So It's not just, you know, you win on upside, but also you take responsibility when things go south. One way that some worker cooperatives really walk the talk is when in a hard time, like during COVID, some will decide, looking around, rather than trying to figure out who's going to lose their work, is to decide to collectively share the pain, to take a wage cut, to postpone something or another, so that everybody can hang on to their job, even if it's at a reduced rate, to get through the hard time. So, you know, ownership means having some voice, a measure of control, enjoying some of the financial success that you helped create, and then also accepting responsibility for the hard times and sharing that with your fellow worker owner.
That's great. That's great. I'm smiling. I hear themes from asking hundreds and hundreds of people, what does ownership mean at my company and many other companies? I'm just overjoyed that very similar themes came through loud and clear with your experience with the worker co-ops. And that's just wonderful. There's this whole other universe beyond ESOPs that we can learn about and leverage and choose to spend our money at to empower people being successful and cared for and hopefully gaining some personal wealth. So it's wonderful to hear that.
And that's one reason why I'm hoping my audience will check out your show, because there's so much to be learned from the ESOP experience, the experience of all of those kinds of worker owners.
Yeah, that's great. I had one more specific question for you that I'm curious. So I just want to set this up carefully. I've had some fun debates and heard other people talking over the years about the owner mindset and the owner behaviors and things. I think through COVID, it's magnified the mindset, but more so the behaviors. What does the behavior of an owner really look like? Well, a fun sort of debate is, do people come in as owners, or do they like feeling that their voice matters, that they're cared about, and they're challenged? Being an owner is great, but it's not always easy. There's cheering to be done occasionally, but it's a fairly intense experience. It's also very rewarding. So I have come to believe, I'm putting all my chips on, the ownership mindset is in there, and it's a matter of time when trust is built and behaviors are seen and experienced, that for some new employees, it can come out very quickly, and for some may come out over time. When I bring that to you with worker co-ops, do you think that it's something through the experience they develop, or do you think it's already within the individual and the structure of a co-op really lets that blossom?
It's something that is cultivated over time.
Yeah.
And a couple of reasons. I used to track this kind of thing at Equal Exchange. And at one point, I was tracking every single person who had ever been hired. I remember we got to the 200 mark. Of course, many people had come and gone. Not all 200 were still at the business. And I was looking through and I realized that maybe two at the most had prior experience at a worker cooperative. For the vast majority, even for myself, I'd had no exposure to it anywhere, not in college, not in the many business magazines that I was reading, not with anybody that I talked to, never heard about it in the media. So we had to prepare people for that. And a lot goes into it, and that could be a whole show unto itself, how we prepare people and how we try to build and maintain a culture. There were a few who, like I said, there were two, and actually I can remember who they were now, who had that prior experience. There were also a few who had read about it, or maybe they had been customers of a worker cooperative. So they were, and for these few, it was a reason why they sought us out. They wanted to join a worker cooperative. And in that case, sometimes it would be a matter of walking people back down the ladder of expectations to explain that it wasn't going to be a utopia. The model wasn't a panacea. There's still, you know, it's human nature. People making decisions together as groups, it can be hard, but it can be done. And there's all the challenges that every business has. So for the vast majority, it was something that they learned after joining the business. Some would throw themselves into it. Others like, nope, like I like this place. I'm going to do my time. I'm going to go to meetings if I have to. I might sit in the back. I'm not going to get in the way. So there's a range of experiences with that. And I know that in the other worker cooperatives, that even magnifies the diversity of experiences. But generally, it's something that has to be built, cultivated after people join the co-op.
That's great. Very helpful insight. If it helps a little bit from the ESOP world, it's happened at our company, and I've talked to others where it's happened, where there was an acquisition and a new owner says, wait a minute, if I'm an owner and we're all equal, why didn't I know about the acquisition? And have to sort of help them understand that whether you're an ownership company or not, you have to be very careful with an acquisition because it can fluctuate stock price and all kinds of other things can go. And so it's interesting. I'm going to borrow your phrase going forward, where you're sort of walking them back, helping them at this stage, at this time, this is what we can do. And over time, we'll add more and you'll have more knowledge and go forward. So I appreciated that. So I'd like to finish with, what are you so excited about with your Y Worker co-ops? What are you excited about? And somebody who's never really delved into the world of worker co-ops, what can they learn from your show?
To answer the first question about like why I'm excited, two things come to mind. The first is I did a lot of PR for Equal Exchange. So I was out in the public a lot and I'd get these questions. Why aren't there more? You know, you, Rodney, tell this glowing story about the Equal Exchange experience. The business is successful. You make money, you make profits, you pay dividends, you grow, you're a leader in some categories. Well, why aren't there more worker cooperatives? And to me, there are many reasons, but a big one, people don't know about it. You don't go do something you never heard of. If you've had no exposure to it, no matter how good or appealing it might be, you don't do that thing. So we want to get the model out in front of more people and do it in a way that gets them excited about it and shows all the promise. So that would be one. And another, which I didn't even have on my radar when Brett was first floating this idea, which was how much I and other people who are already in co-ops stand to learn from the show. So I've only interviewed a few people, and with each show, I'm learning more. So it isn't just, we got this great secret and we're going to share it with the world, but that we, people in the worker cooperative world, we have so much to share with each other. So suddenly I realized that that too is an audience, and I'm excited to see what more I'm going to learn and what people are learning from each other.
That's fantastic. That's great. Thank you for your insights. It'll be a lot of fun to follow your show. And I think some of what you cover and how you cover it will definitely influence the conversations I'm having on owner to owner. So even though we are theoretically running off in different directions within the world of ownership, it'll be fun to work with you and find some of those themes.
And there's a lot of overlap too.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm looking forward to our working together as a team in the future. I want to bring Brett back into the conversation for his closing words. But Rodney, really enjoyed the conversation today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Brett. Thank you.
All right, Brett, please.
I'd like to share a couple of different thoughts, but I'll tee it up by saying, here's my excitement for the EO Podcast Network. And it's the conversation that both of you just had. You're both bringing your passion, your expertise, your perspective. And what I love about what Rodney just said as he wrapped up is, you know, I've done 340 episodes of the ESOP podcast and the ESOP minicast, and I'll acknowledge humbly a certain level of broad expertise in employee ownership now. But in almost every episode that I have a guest on, they are experts in their little piece of it that goes far deeper in their area of expertise than my general expertise. So the opportunity that we have generally is to bring other voices together with the understanding that we as hosts will learn, and we're in a unique position. Jesse, you're not doing anything essentially different from what you've been doing at Hypertherm with your work there or TEA or other places. This is just another format as you're learning. So the fact that we can have the conversations and then spread them to the world just brings me an awful lot of joy and happiness.
That's great. That's great. And it's just a lot of fun to be part of this and be able to hear the different voices. And yeah, I think it's really an opportunity for us to broaden the community and learn together and find more topics to talk about in future episodes. Have some fun along the way.
There are so many different threads, Jesse, and you touched upon it a little bit in this episode. There are so many things that all of us are doing that we can just look at a little bit differently and put into our own pieces. So Rodney will hear stuff in ESOP world, and not only is it going to fit into his thinking, but he's going to bring that to the co-op world and vice versa. What I love about your podcast, Jesse, is there is nobody doing what you're doing, which is an employee owner talking specifically to employee owners about what's important to the employee owners. There may be other podcasts or other media hosted by an employee owner who occasionally talks, but your focus And I'll be candid, your focus is on what we call collectively the essential workers, the frontline workers, the rank and file in some contexts. And these are people that, generally speaking, not only aren't they well known in the employee ownership world, but some of them may not be well known in their companies beyond their particular branch or committee works or that kind of thing. So you're mindfully seeking out voices that we haven't listened to.
Yeah, my passion for that, hearing the voices not usually heard, came from running some, over years I've been running Problem Busters, which is an idea that I got from Butler Till, an awesome ESOP. If you want to see how to do great communication, beyond that, they're a marketing company. The way they talk about their employee owners, the way they talk about the community is just incredible. So please follow Butler Till. But I talked to their president probably 6 years ago when I was researching participatory decision-making at employee-owned companies and wrote like a 10-page report and reported out to our management team because they want to know what are other ESOPs doing, larger, smaller, similar size, and made the Problem Busters fit for our company. And we've had product development we wouldn't have had from a customer problem was solved, which is going to drive a whole lot of revenue we're going to share. There were no engineers in the group that came up with the idea for this product. This is a pain the customers are having. How can we solve it? And you get a bunch of people who don't usually see each other because we have 1,900 people globally. You get people together and you start to have this just rainstorm of ideas and different ways of doing things. And you take away the swim lanes and just let people go. It can lead to solving customer problems. It's led to a product that's become very valuable to us and we share in the reward. It really is an extension of seeing what can happen if you talk to the voices you don't usually talk to and hear from them. I've said this before, I see a lot of the rank and file essential frontline workers as a critical part of the economy is often more susceptible to layoffs and other job insecurity. And so the idea that their voice does matter and they will absolutely use it and make sure that you know that, but they're also sharing equally in wealth building is very different. A lot of the folks that I work with and talking to other companies since COVID started, a lot of people have been traumatized by layoff they never saw coming. And if you can go forward with more security and start to rebuild your own confidence, your own voice, just as a person after going through that trauma of the layoff. And on the other end of their career, they might end up being able to retire with well above the national average of a retirement savings and retire on time. That's a beautiful thing. So to just getting them talking about it, it's one of the most common words in the ownership world is we. There's a lot of we and share. When I did a global project for the management team, we had 302 global associates across all shifts and regions. We're in Asia, Brazil, around the world. And the three most common words used, I did a word search and I sat there verklempt at my desk because I didn't want anyone to see that I was all welled up. Of hundreds of global comments, the three most common words were we share pride. And that's awesome, powerful. But if it's always we, where am I? Where are you? And so to just have owners step back from the we and the drive and the intensity and the peer pressure to deliver and all of those things and just get them talking about their own personal experience. I've asked so many people these questions. All this opportunity with this podcast is just a different audience for conversations I've been having for 14 years. And it's just a lot of fun to be able to share that in a different way. And frankly, in most of the episodes, you won't hear my voice nearly this much. Because I just want to put them at ease, ask them open questions, and let them go. And it's just fascinating to hear how ownership impacts them as a person, how it impacts their family and their community. So I'm excited to hear from more owners and be able to ask them from the perspective as a fellow owner, even if we've just met.
I love that. And the three of us have talked about how we're getting ideas from each other, how we put them in our own prism. For example, I can't host the podcast that you host for the reasons that I discussed, but as I listen to it, it's also from the ear prism of, you know, the CEO president for a couple of years and then a trustee for 7 years hired by the board of directors and worked directly with the C-suite. And so I'm hearing them, your podcast and your conversations as we're in the editing phase, and I'm hearing things that just strike me as, I want to ask some of my C-suite guests about. And I'll give you an example, and this isn't the end-all, be-all example, and it may make sense for large companies. But I will say this. If a company has, and I've learned this listening to folks on your podcast, if a company has multiple offices and branches, the bigger freaking deal it is when somebody from upstairs comes to visit, the more I think something's out of whack with the culture. First of all, do you have a sense, and we're not talking about your guest companies, we're talking about broad. Do you have a sense of where I'm getting that and why I might have, you know, like now I'm saying, huh, is this something the C-suite should be focused on? You got to get out and about more.
Yeah, well, there's a debate. I think it's really interesting. Should the C-suite be out and about in multiple locations, visible, and so they can see the leader and potentially leadership behaviors and have the connection? Or do the top level leaders trust everyone else to do what they need to do? And so it's great to be able to have those personal connections and presence, but is some of the success of a healthy employee-owned company, does that potentially enable leaders to be able to focus on what their superpowers bring to it and less of what can be familiar maybe before COVID, where it's easier to have more presence? So I'm answering your question with a question.
All right, but let me say harumph. And as we're recording this, I have crossed my arms, harumph. I expected, and here's what's beautiful about both of your podcasts and hopefully what my podcasts bring to the table and what we're doing together in the network is that view of perspective. And I even put in the prism of my expectation that you, as one of the essential workers that you talk about, one of the frontline folks, would say, damn right, they got to get here, et cetera, et cetera. And you were like, maybe we want them doing their jobs just like we're doing our jobs. And I'm like, harumph. I give you credit. That's the perspective, but that's the kind of exchanging of ideas. And we'll do with Rodney as well. That's going to make, I think, the conversations we're all having very, very interesting.
Yeah. So I wanted to actually shift this to a question for Rodney, because I am curious for worker co-op. So while I was aggravating Brett by not necessarily directly answering his question, a very common theme that I've heard before, and I've heard on several of the recordings, I think each of them, is that if I want to reach out to the CEO and ask a question, they welcome my question. Or if I want to give an opinion, they want to hear it. And I can have that connection. And so it's more the permission and encouragement to have a voice and actually talk to the person at the highest level, or the CFO or the CEO. So I'm just curious, with the land of worker co-ops, do you hear that similar? Everyone has one voice and one vote, which again, I'm fascinated by, but somebody still is running it or has a higher level position or team. Do you find, with your experience in the worker co-ops, that the rank and file, frontline, whatever term you want to settle on, feels that permission and comfort and trust to be able to talk to the top level person and share their voice?
This will sound evasive, but as I was, I think, saying before, like, it depends.
Right.
You know, is it a worker co-op of five people where they're all kind of doing the same work? Mm. I think the biggest one historically has always been the CHCA. It's a cooperative in the Bronx with over 2,000 workers, most of whom are home healthcare workers. So they're out in the city making a difference in people's lives, not actually working together under one roof. So you have different sizes, you have different styles. As I think I was saying, some are hierarchical, like an equal exchange. Some have almost no management structure, or they're very flat. Even within equal exchange, it would depend on, are you in the Oregon office or in the big Bridgewater, Massachusetts office? Are you working at a desk or are you working in the warehouse? Do you work for Bob or for Mary? Like our sales team, my impression, I wasn't in sales, but my impression was it was more participatory than some of the other departments, which were more hierarchical. So it could really vary. And also, some worker co-ops, certainly in the States, come out of a labor organizing background. Mm-hmm. And where the then, either these are workers who are trying to unionize, or they already were unionized, and they basically had to take over the company. You know, like somebody was trying to shut it down, mm-hmm. or it was a lockout, a labor lockout or something. And so some come out of a history of more conflict with management, and that could carry on in those co-ops where the new worker owners really keep management on a short leash. But you got other situations where it's more like a traditional business environment with the hierarchy and worker owners. Yeah, they nominate and they may fill all of the seats on the board and they oversee management, but maybe with a lighter touch. But you get the whole gamut.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's really interesting. One of the aspects of the ESOPs, it depends on their maturity. You know, a place like really successful in Pacific Steel has been an ESOP. I think they're one of the older ESOPs. So this isn't necessarily the right fit for them. But for a lot of ESOPs that I've interacted with, there's in the last 10 or 15 years, generally, they've become an ESOP. And what we see is, and I want to explore on the owner to owner, what is the foundational culture from the values, then the founders and how that was done and the early employees? What is ownership and where do those mix and mingle? Just because there's a successful company that is now employee owned, I don't know that always honors the founder and their story if it's been too long ago. Mm-hmm. And so there's certain values and perspectives and priorities that can grow in, and new owners come in and they know it is ownership. But then the long-term employees know that as, you know, Dick and Barbara Couch, who started Hypertherm, and how they did certain things. And, you know, as soon as there was profit, they shared it.
And this could be true either at a co-op or an ESOP. Do we do this thing that we cherish because we're an ESOP / co-op? Or do we do it because that was the precedent set by, say, founders or early leaders in the business? We certainly talked about that at Equal and trying to distinguish between those two things.
Yeah.
Guys, if I can chime in, one of the interesting thing, and I've had this conversation with folks from a number of different companies, is at some point the employee owners are certainly furthering the founder's legacy. But on another very real way, the moment the employee owners own the company, they are now starting their own legacy as employee owners. So it does build upon each other. Some of it is founder legacy and some Hypertherm and Caris Reels and Gardner Supply, just some New England ones. Absolutely, the founders had the vibe long before they were employee-owned. Right. But certainly, you can become employee-owned and get the vibe. They just got to follow a lot of people like you, Jesse, and learn how to do it.
Yeah, it's just a unique personal journey to be part of ownership. And I'm saying this across to Rodney and his focus and passion on the worker co-ops with what I've learned so far. I think that if your identity can be shaken by getting laid off, your identity can be regenerated. I haven't really said this out loud before. It's a big deal if you like to go to work because we spend so much time. I'm not using any catchphrases around this. When you're an intense, passionate worker, and then you plug yourself into a community, whether it's a worker co-op or an ESOP, and you're valued, it matters. You have permission to push a little in the best interest. You have to be patient to be pushed back. You can't say, it's not my job. I think that is what is a story to be heard more in the individual voice, because it's about who we are. And yes, our family, and yes, our causes, and yes, all of those things. But we all spend the most time in our lives in a workplace. And if that workplace can feel pretty good most of the time, but feel fair all of the time, how different? You know, the research showing that employee owners are happier, healthier, and wealthier. It's bigger than a simple cause. It's bigger than a concept, and it's bigger than a retirement plan on the ESOP side of things. I'm appreciative of this opportunity, and I'm having so much fun already. So thank you, Brett, for the opportunity to lend a voice, and thanks for being on today. Rodney, I'm looking forward to working with you as we run off in different directions into the ownership world and circle back and find what I suspect to be more and more common themes and passions and interests and success stories. So thank you very much for your time. It's a joy to work with you, and thanks for being on the Owner to Owner podcast today.
Thank you for having me on.
Jesse, thank you for having me on. And just once more, a personal thank you. I am so grateful for your friendship and the work that you are developing. I think that it's important, as with Rodney, we are all furthering the conversation. So you have my gratitude, and thank you for everything that you're doing.
Let's go forward in ownership. Okay. Thanks again to Brett Kiesling and Rodney North for the conversation today. Thanks all for listening. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at EO Podcast Network. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Production assistance by Victoria Huerta. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.